Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and also get more info on the podcast and see previous episodes and more content at dsmsports.net. Really psyched about today's episode. I think you're really going to enjoy it. We're going to be talking to the head of content for Liverpool Football Club, Alex Kunavic. Really interesting to talk to him. He is leading content for one of the biggest teams in the world. You know, no bigger sport than soccer/football. And he offers up a lot of great insight into everything they do with their content for monetization, serving a global audience, and really making Liverpool, a football family all around the world. But before we get to this episode's interview with Alex, we have this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool comes from a friend of mine named Caleb Mezzi, and he's found a great website where you can actually keep track of Periscope streams. Everyone's heard of Periscope by now, I'm sure, if you're listening to this podcast. That is the live streaming video app, kind of Twitter's answer to Meerkat, that allows you to stream live video from your mobile device straight to Twitter, and people can then access it through the Periscope app. And right now, if you log into the Periscope app, you can see all the current live streams and see what's popular, but there's no really easy way to access it via desktop. However, if you go to today's helpful tool, the website called streamalong.tv, that's the words streamalong.tv, and you can get a look at the latest and greatest Periscope streams that are currently live as well as archived. You can search streams by category, including, you know, animals, entertainment, sports, even AMAs, you know, Ask Me Anything, as well as check out what's trending in terms of what hashtags are popular among Periscope streams. Now, it's not foolproof, as almost a week after Mayweather-Pacquiao, that Mayweather-Pacquiao is still trending a little bit on the Periscope, according to streamalong.tv, so it's not perfect there, but it really is a great way if you're on your desktop and just want to get a quick look at sort of what's popular on Periscope, and also look by category as well, which is a little bit easier on the streamalong.tv website. So give it a look, see how it'll help you. It'll help you keep track of really finding some good content on Periscope, and really help you do your homework a little bit to see, you know, what is popular, what are the people doing day to day on Periscope, and how could it improve your Periscope strategy, whether you're working for a team, or an organization, or a brand. So that's this episode's helpful tool, a neat little free website called streamalong.tv, and it's a great way to discover more about Periscope. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. We'll be right back for a great interview with Liverpool FC's head of content, Alex Kunavic. You're really going to enjoy it. Stay tuned. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. It's called streamalong.tv, and it's a way to check out what's going on the Periscope app. You can look at what's trending as well as certain videos in different categories. And maybe our guest has a little bit to say about Periscope. Not sure if it's made all the way out to the UK yet, but we are delighted to have Alex Kunavic, head of content for Liverpool Football Club. Welcome to the podcast, Alex.
Thank you very much, Neil. How are you?
So has Periscope really gotten big over there yet, or is live streaming video on Twitter not all the way with the EPL in the UK yet?
No, it's certainly making it. It's certainly something we're interested in as a club, but it's I don't think it's being used quite as much as the States yet. Like I saw Pittsburgh Penguins, for example, doing their locker clean out interviews. They put them all on Periscope. Obviously, there's been the PGA taking up Periscope, you know, a couple of days after telling a reporter not to use it. So I think it's a very interesting challenge, and it's a very interesting challenge for those companies who obviously pay lots of money for TV rights. You know, I saw a lot of talk on the weekend around people who hadn't maybe paid to watch Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, and they'd chosen to watch it via Periscope thing. So it's certainly it could well become a big issue for TV companies to ponder going forward.
Oh, most definitely. There's a lot of opportunities to engage fans further, but you guys will learn out there that there's a lot of problems, of course, with the IP, with the intellectual rights and the property rights and the media rights. So it should be interesting to watch. But we don't want to spend too long talking about Periscope. We want to learn all about what you do at Liverpool FC, one of the biggest teams in the world. And so there's a lot to learn. But before we get into this week's interview, We always like to get to know our guests a little bit. You have a really impressive background, really interesting background. So tell us a little about your career path, how you got started, where you went to school, and any tips along the way for anyone else that wants to work in sports.
Yeah, sure. So I went to university in Leeds, which is in Yorkshire in the north of England. I did politics. And I didn't really do any sports journalism there. I did one story on a Wednesday afternoon, and then I realized that all the stories had to be written on Wednesday afternoon, which was, you know, an afternoon everyone else in the university had off, and I didn't think at the time it was worth my time. So that was literally as far as I went, and I never really, even at university, thought too much about what I was going to do afterwards. I was going out with a girl for most of uni, and when she was going to be a teacher, so I thought, well, hey, I'll do a teaching course too. We went traveling around the States and Canada after we graduated, and we ended up splitting up on that trip, split up in the middle of it, still to finish the trip, got back to England, and obviously I had no interest in following her down south to be a teacher. So what to do? So with a politics degree and not much else, a big love of sport, so I was kind of just researching different careers, going down to London for various job interviews. Nothing was really fitting. And I met a lad called Dave Heitner, who was a friend of a friend, who Dave now writes for the Guardian newspaper over here. But at the time, he just got onto the training scheme with the Daily Express newspaper. And he told me about these postgraduate courses in newspaper journalism, of which he'd just done one. Sounded interesting to me. Did some research on these courses, liked the sound of them. So extremely competitive to get on. So I basically took a year out and did a year's worth of unpaid work experience at lots of different places, from press agencies to big newspapers, radio stations, doing all sorts of stuff. I managed to get my way onto one of these courses, which was at Central Lancashire, which was in Preston, which is also in the north of England and rains a lot, so probably not dissimilar to maybe the northwest of the States, but certainly a very, very rainy place. And it was a great course. I mean, it was like having a full-time job. It was 40 hours a week. It was 2 hours short on every morning. Very intensive newspaper course taught by a lot of, lot of good people. Coming out of there, just, you know, looking for jobs and stuff, this was the summer of 2000. I ended up getting a job on a website. I'd never actually been on the internet in 2000.
Oh,
I'd never sent an email. I'd never been on the internet. Ended up getting a job in London in 2000, which was great. Office was with a load of other young lads in the heart of London. The company was called greatforsports.com, and they had an F1 contract, which was quite good, and then all the sports stuff, and that lasted about 7-8 months before, obviously, 2000, then the 2001 was, you know, the first dot-com boom, and, you know, a lot of companies went under, and we were among those. So early 2001, again, looking for a job, I got a job at Preston North End Football Club. Never intended to go back to Preston, just ended up that way, and it was a good time to be there. They were pushing for a place in the Premier League. They were managed by David Moyes, who obviously went on to manage Manchester United, and they got to the playoff final. They had a really good season. It was really good 9 months of a tiny team, you know, two or three of us doing all the press stuff, doing the programme, doing the website. You know, we won programme of the year. We kind of did a lot of different stuff because we had free license to, you know, at these smaller clubs, you will end up doing everything and anything, web commentary and everything. So I did that. Preston didn't get promoted, stayed there over the summer.
Was the website really an afterthought then, or did you guys know pretty early on that this was going to become something pretty important?
It was becoming a more effective way to communicate with the fans. I mean, message boards were still absolutely huge then, back in 2001. There was no real video on there. It was more long-form interviews, previews, all that sort of stuff, all written word with the odd photo, you know, and the match day programme obviously took precedence in terms of monetizing. You know, we would do the odd column about betting with our betting partners and previewing games, but it wasn't a big source, you know. It was a very small team, but it was a great time to be there to get that experience, because suddenly Preston became focus of a lot of people because they got within the game of the Premier League. So did that for 9 months, and then I saw a very small advert in the Guardian newspaper. Jobs at the BBC, and I applied, and I was lucky enough to get one. And I think most people in their career will have a turning point, either a bit of luck or chance. And, you know, I think about 1,000 people applied for these jobs, and me and one other guy got them, you know, so there has to be a certain element of luck in there. So went down to London in 2001, and that was working on Match of the Day, the big soccer program, working on Wimbledon, the Olympics, basically doing a lot of the research, a lot of the scripting for presenters, breaking news, all that sort of stuff. Some really good trips, like going to Portugal for a month to do Euro 2004, you know, really good trips, live TV, which I did about for 3 years, and then didn't want to travel as much, wanting to stay closer to home, or at least closer to my missus. So moved to Sports News, who was still based in London, and worked on Sports News for a couple of years. At the same time as that, me and some friends of mine started a podcast called The Beautiful Game, which we were inspired by Ricky Gervais, Stephen Merchant, who'd obviously became podcasting stars at the end of 2005. Mm. We were kind of inspired by that, you know, and it seems crazy that we were doing that 10 years ago to now. But we actually got up to number three in the world for sports podcasts, which was, wow, you know, only 15,000-20,000 downloads back then. But it was mad to be getting emails from people saying, I listened to you in the Golan Heights and stuff like that, you know.
Wow.
And we were all working at the BBC, but we kept it under wraps. We had an offer to sign with Audible and do it, and all working at the BBC and not really having great commercial heads, we declined that. We went to Germany mainly with work for the World Cup in 2006 and did some great stuff there. But you know, then life got more serious and people got married and all that, and it kind of tailed off. But it was a great labour of love, you know, and it was a great thing to do, because at the time that was pretty much cutting edge, you know, going back 10 years. So anyway, back to my story. Sports News until about 2007. Worked on the BBC Sport website for 6 months, and then I went freelance for 6 months again. A lot of BBC stuff, a lot of working with Satanta, who'd got the EPL rights at the time as well. They had a presenter there called Rebecca Lowe, who I'd worked with at the BBC, who obviously has gone on to be very famous, fronting all the soccer coverage for NBC now. And then another small advert in The Guardian was for jobs in Abu Dhabi. And me and my wife, who's also a journalist, replied to that advert. And within 6 weeks of, you know, replying to that at the start of December 2007, by the start of 2008, we were living in Abu Dhabi to launch a newspaper called The National, which had a lot of good people on from the Daily Telegraph, a lot of good people from the National Post in Canada, interesting mix of people from the States, Australia, the Middle East. So I was deputy editor there. I was sports content editor there. I helped launch, Abu Dhabi Media Company got the Arabic Premier League contract for 3 years, so I helped launch that as well. That was great. I mean, working with a lot of Brits, but also lads from, you know, Syria, Jordan, just really great experience. To launch something like that was just fantastic. So we worked in the Middle East for 3 years, and then family reasons, came home. My wife was pregnant and we wanted to have kids back in England. So we came back in 2011, and I was always confident I'd get a job at the BBC, and thankfully I did. And BBC Sport moved from the south to the north, up to near Manchester, which was helpful for us for family reasons. And basically started doing more global stuff. If ever you watch BBC World on your TV, the sports stuff there, I was doing a lot of that. Some old service radio, I was senior producer there, and did that for 3 years and absolutely loved it, really loved it, because I'm quite a big fan of American sports. And then saw the job advertised at Liverpool, which was head of content. So I had one interview that was with my boss, who's the chief media officer, and someone from HR that was quite informal. Then I had to do a presentation for a few people, including the head of press, and then a third interview as well. And then I got the job. So I started in literally just about a year ago, in May 2014 was when I started.
Wow. Has it been a big learning curve there, going from a strictly more media role to a team that has goals to really drive revenue on a daily basis?
100%, and it's not just to do with revenue, it's to do with the commercial aspect. You know, obviously, you don't really get much of that at the BBC. Now, BBC World has a little bit more leverage to do that, and I did some stuff around that, getting, you know, stuff, you know, Wimbledon update sponsored by Rolex, and some stuff that we would bid for because the channel had a certain amount of money for promotion, and we would bid for those to get promotional slots, and then we would go and film, say, in Lisbon or Madrid, some, you know, to promo our Champions League coverage and stuff like that. So I had a little taste of that, but nothing like what I've learned here. You know, I've, in a year, learned an incredible amount in terms of, you know, how you treat your fans. You know, there's obviously the business side of it, the branding side of it, everything, you know, the customer services side of it. You know, it's such an expanding market and such an expanding club. You know, there's a new challenge and something new to learn every day.
Wow, I can't imagine. But let's jump back really quickly. First off, really impressive background. Sounds like you had quite a circuitous path and got a lot of good experience, and really just kept your eyes open for the next good opportunity. But I guess tell me, when did digital and really social media become a bigger part of your career, and when it became bigger in the UK?
I think it was probably when we were living in Abu Dhabi. I mean, Twitter was a very different place in 2008 to how it is now. You know, it was so niche almost back then, and now it's, you know, it's mainstream, and then it's something else new comes along, be it Snapchat or Periscope, and then that's niche, and then that goes huge as well. So I think it was around then people started using that information. You know, BBC has always been relatively slow on the pickup of to innovate. You know, it's the public's money it's spending, so it has to be sure. So on the one hand, it might, you know, the BBC invented the iPlayer, which is the incredible tool where you can watch live TV or watch TV, anything that's been on there for the last 30 days, or radio. You know, it's one of the best bits of technology around. It invented that. But when it came to embracing social, it was a lot slower. So even when I was moving back to the BBC, social wasn't a big part of it. It's become bigger and bigger. But even when I took my role at Liverpool, to begin with, that was only ahead of TV content role, and it's since developed into other things. But primarily, that was the job that I took on when I joined Liverpool.
So was there sort of a part when you joined Liverpool that you came in and said, we need to think about content from a multi-channel perspective, not just TV and social and digital all in separate parts, or it really needs to be consistent and together? Or was that kind of already in the process of happening?
No, it was definitely happening, but it was more personnel changes. Like, there was a guy who was in charge of web/digital, and he left in the September, so I took on his responsibilities. Then our head of international left in January, and we've got someone else in to replace him. But because of the people leaving, kind of presented more opportunities to me. You know, I loved working at the BBC, but kind of our frustration was they weren't maybe embracing enough digital stuff. And there are certain rules around it. There's certain things you can and can't do because it's the BBC in terms of what you can promote. You know, there's certain, only certain people can get verified Twitter accounts if you're at the BBC. So there's certain things you can't promote, you know, and they like to push as many things as possible through that at BBC Sports. So it's very hard to get, you know, if we want to do a global sports account, it's quite hard to get signed off. Now, I think World Service Radio has had more success with that in terms of sports, our BBC Sports World and stuff. You know, those guys interact with their fans very well. Certainly BBC Sports Hour does it brilliantly, the guys that run that. But BBC Global TV has kind of been slightly related to that party, but it's always something I've been interested in, and it's always something I was pushing in Abu Dhabi, because it's, you know, I could see then that's going to be the future career. You know, it's to just be a TV producer is as obsolete as just to be a newspaper writer. You can't, you know, it's about the mediums that you're reaching people through. You know, that's more important than anything now.
Even your title itself, head of content, speaks to that, it's not just TV or head of website, it's really content, and because it does go all over. And what was Liverpool doing when you first arrived in terms of leveraging their content, producing team content, using it to engage with fans, and using it to on different channels? What was sort of the status quo when you arrived, and were they looking for change?
Yeah, I think they're looking for expansion. I mean, if you look at how the number of people that are engaged with us socially, March 2014 was 27 mil, and by the start of this year, it's almost 40 million. So, you know, in terms of that, it's gone to the roof. You know, we've expanded to a lot of foreign markets and places like that. But there was also a big emphasis on TV. I mean, Liverpool started a TV channel 6 years ago. And one of the biggest changes that we've done since I was there was we relaunched the TV channel, and it was no longer free. We started charging for it, which was obviously a massive, massive change. Mm-hmm. We partnered with Sky Sports, and we launched in November. You know, we went off air in early September, so that's an incredibly quick turnaround. You know, 2 months to launch a channel, to change the sets. We went from SD to HD. You know, we changed our programming. We've increased our staff, all told, in the department from 50 to 70. You know, incredible changes in a very short space of time. So, and obviously, you have to manage that change of, if you're going to start charging people for something, because that was the only way we could keep the channel going, we had to deliver something that people are going to want to watch, you know. So, and how do we integrate that TV programming in with the rest of what we do? You know, we have a pay for digital subscription, LFC TV Go, which is live telly and on demand stuff. So, you know, we have two different subscription propositions. So how do we manage them? You know, how do we make sure we don't cannibalize content? How do we promote that stuff? So these are all challenges, you know, that the team have faced in the last year and will continue to face. You know, it's very much still a developing area.
And is that where a lot of the clubs out there are doing? Are they starting to go into the premium content space and even creating their own networks, or is Liverpool kind of one of the first in that realm?
We're not one of the first, but, you know, certainly having a 24/7 bespoke channel is a massive, massive, you know, not a drain on resources, but you need a lot of resources to do that. Manchester United do it as well. Chelsea have got a channel, but, you know, you have to put so much resources in, you know, and the guys do an incredible job. I'm not a particularly big team at all, you know, for a 24/7 channel we do. We can't show first team games live, but we show them on delay, but we still do pre and post match. We show as many under-18s and many 21s games live as we can. We do a lot about the ladies. So it's not just about the first team, you know, it's just an incredible amount of work. And then you have to factor in LFC TV Go, that's our digital proposition. You know, what are those guys kind of differently? You know, they will do things. So tonight, we have a show called the Thursday Night Show, which is more informal, relaxed chat show. And those guys will go in either before or after the show and do something different with the guests. And that's, you know, we will then point to that to the website. And that's the thing as well, the cross-promotion has got much, much better in terms of how we promote our stuff. Clips that we're giving away free, pointing to things, you know. We are much, much better at that than we were a year ago. You know, I think there's the kind of joined-up workflow and the cycle of that is much better than it was.
Wow, so that really opens up. You talked about a lot of the challenges and trying to think about what content's going to go everywhere. So when you guys sit down and plan, I don't know if it's week to week or month to month or day to day, even the content that you guys are looking to produce, are you earmarking that, okay, this is content that's going to be free and going to social media, this is going to the web, this is going to be premium going to the TV network, this is going to be premium going to the mobile app? What's the process like of kind of labeling and making sure that you're serving each master without duplicating stuff and still being able to serve the free content too?
Yeah, well, that's the big challenge. I mean, we have a lady called Hayley McCool, who's our social media editor, and she joined in January. She was the first social media editor of LFC. They've never had one before. You know, so you can kind of see that this is still developing. I mean, she'd worked for BBC Sport, but she'd also done a lot of stuff like music festivals and lifestyle stuff and cool stuff. And that's, you know, it's really important to bring in those people as well and not just have everyone in your department that knows just about LFC and football. You know, those people are invaluable. But if you can bring in a mixture of people who've got different experiences and different backgrounds, it will change how your content looks. So, you know, we were hardly putting anything on Facebook a year ago. Now, I think January we put 40 things on Facebook. You know, it's just in terms of the video, the reach there is incredible. We will, if we are releasing something to the public as well, say, for example, we sign a player, the full interview will be available either on our pay for TV or our pay for digital, but we will release, say, a minute to TV companies, and we'll put a minute on our YouTube. We will always put it on our YouTube, so websites have to embed it, because what we don't want is people taking our content and monetizing it for themselves. So, you know, we do have to watch that. There's been a couple of instances where people have done that, but people are normally quite good, you know, when you give them a tap on the shoulder and stuff. And that's the way we can control it, by putting those sort of things on YouTube.
Do you guys try to save, like, the good stuff, so to speak, for the premium channels, or is the best stuff you can offer go out to the free channels, and then the full stuff is more on the premium than the mobile side?
It's, you know what, my boss used to work in the movie industry, and it's very much, you know, it's like a trailer, right? All the best bits are in there, and you have to give some of that best stuff away. You have to give some of those top lines away, because otherwise you're not going to entice people. There's no point in saying, come and look behind this paywall. We won't say what's behind it, but we promise you it's amazing. That's not going to get people in. We did a great long-form piece with Felipe Coutinho, who's a star Brazilian midfielder for Liverpool and was on the in Team of the Year this season. We did a piece with him at his home and with his wife and walking the dogs and all that sort of stuff, and we did a couple of different things. Like, we got him to do a couple of vines, which that's something, you know, we've never done before, specific vines. So he's known as the magician, so we had one of him just innocuous sitting around waiting to be filmed, and he clicks his finger and a flame appears out of it and then he blows it out.
That's great.
And there was another one where he's in the park, puts his hand to the camera, takes it away, and he's in his living room. You know, it's just little things like that, which you know, we're using the build up to these, you know, to draw people in. The other thing is that we've developed is a great content sharing relationships with Sky. We're obviously business partners with them, but BBC as well, BT, you know, places where I've worked out, and some of my colleagues have worked out, you know, we're getting some really good content off other big broadcasters, you know. And also, maybe the case was, oh, you can have this interview previewing a game, but you can't have it till after the game. Now we're getting that stuff before the game because we're developing this kind of give and take, you know, because we get certain things that no one else will get, so we will give them some content and vice versa. I mean, there are certain things that will always go out for free. Anything we do with kids, we do a show called Cop Kids, that's Cop with a K. The Cop is the big stand behind the goal at Anfield, which is, you know, full of incredibly loud, fervent, you know, passionate supporters. And anything we do with Cop Kids, that always goes out free. So we had stuff that you'll be able to see on our YouTube, and that's the only place we will put that to kind of maximise all the hits in one place. We have Daniel Sturridge, who's the star striker, doing having a dance-off with one of our new presenters, and Mario Balotelli, who's probably our most famous player on social media. You know, he's doing toy car racings with the young lads. So, you know, the players buy into that sort of stuff. But again, we have to be wary because, for example, we'd already planned for the storage content to go out and the show to go out, but it was announced, I think, just before the show went out, or maybe the day after the content had gone out online, that he was actually injured. So, but then with that content, we had to make sure that we told people that it had been filmed, you know, in February, I think. So just to make sure, because, you know, you have to really take into account what's the perception of, you know, the club putting out content of a guy dancing with some kids and he's just been ruled out with injury, right? So, you know, it's, you have to be very sensitive. The other thing is, I don't know how much you guys know, but the Hillsborough disaster back in 1989 when 96 Liverpool fans died, you know, and that's still going on now. You know, they're still in quest to how those people died now. 26 years on. So again, any content we do around that will always be available for everyone. And April the 15th, to mark the anniversary, our channel goes free to air. We remove all adverts.
Oh, wow.
You know, and each year we will do something different. So this year, our team, led by a guy called Matt Walker, who's just fantastic, he really embraces the project. We did basically video tributes to all the people that lost their lives, you know, family members and stuff like that, you know, and that's you know, an incredible legacy, you know, for what happened. You know, all those videos are there to see. They were put on TV, but they're all to see on the website as well, and, you know, on a beautifully laid out page. And that, you know, think something like Hillsborough, for example, is so unique to Liverpool. It's not something that, say, you know, I've listened to the guys you've had on recently, like from the San Diego Padres or the Portland Trailblazers. That's something that those guys wouldn't have to worry about, you know. But this is kind of an extremely ongoing, sensitive subject that the club obviously feels very passionate about, and the fans do, and the families do, of course. And it's, you know, it's something that still is going on now in this country and hasn't been resolved. So that's something that, you know, it's a very sensitive area that we have to treat with due respect. And, you know, it's something that's always in the forefront of our minds. But that's quite unusual to have sort of a team of, you know, journalists and sports journalists deal with that on a daily basis. You know, we've got a great team, and then really do that very admirably.
Definitely, and it furthers that emotional tie between the fan and the team for sure. Before we move on, I did want to ask really briefly, is there a conscious decision about why you guys post a video to, say, YouTube over trying to do it natively on your website and driving traffic there? And is that a conscious decision you guys have made?
We will put something, if it's a short clip, we will normally put the same clip for free on the website as well. It's normally, if it's something we think that's really going to be shared, then we put it on YouTube as well. That's the thing. Or if it's, say, something like, if there is a commercial reason, like if we sign a sponsorship deal or something that needs to be distributed, it will go there. But, you know, when you look at the numbers compared to, say, Facebook, we had, there was a big charity game at Anfield a couple of months ago, and Thierry Henry was playing, and he did an unbelievable bit of skill. You know, his little fake pass, step, fake pass, and then and that had 4 million hits in a day on Facebook. You know, so we know we can get the numbers on Facebook. That's not an issue, but it's just about how we want to control that content, because we know everything we put out will be picked up by certain newspapers, and, you know, we know Liverpool are news every day of the week. So at least if it's on a YouTube video or something like that, it gives chance for other people to embed it and get our message out and our content out. But it also still allows us to hold on to it. So that, you know, obviously we want people to come to our website. What we might do is even have two clips on the same page, which is the freebie, and then click here for the full video. But people have got to subscribe. I mean, we've been toying with our models of how we do things. The charity game at Anfield was a big deal for us because it was live on our channel, and it was like an all-star game. You know, with Luis Suarez coming back, Xabi Alonso coming back, you know, John Terry and Didier Drogba. You know, and it was live on our channel, and you know, our subscriptions for that game went through the roof. You know, the guys delivered an amazing show. We had access like we would never have normally. Now, we were allowed cameras in the dressing room and stuff like that. We got all the big names. It was absolutely fantastic, you know. From the stuff we got in the build-up to the stuff on the red carpet do afterwards, you know. That's the thing, you know when you get great access, you know, with exclusive access, all that stuff's going to do well. The other thing I've got is, having worked in global sports news, I know people at SNTV, Reuters, Perform, NBC, Fox Australia, Supersport South Africa. I know we can send these clips around the world and we'll get exposure there, both on people's websites and on TV channels, you know. So having that, those guys in my contacts books will all, you know, especially for things like big charity games like that, you know, to get that exposure out there, give the club exposure, is, you know, that's worked really well for us.
Definitely. So beyond the paywall, is there monetization going on with the videos? Are there pre-roll ads or are sponsors being integrated into video content? Or is the revenue from video mainly just coming from the premium content and the paywalls?
Yeah, we don't have much pre-roll at the minute. It's obviously something that we will always look at options. You know, we have people all the time coming to us, you know, every day. You can do this, you can do that. And it's something we will investigate, you know, how best we want our content to look. You know, there are certain things that we will do contractually that have to have certain sponsors on. You know, we will, Standard Chartered, who are our main sponsor, or Vauxhall, who are sponsored with us, we will do some content with them because they get a certain amount of days with us every year. But the deal is that their adverts go on. So there are things like that to take into consideration as well. You know, certain, you know, sponsors will pay for exclusivity if it's on our website. So, you know, it's not as easy as just to say, let's put some adverts on and make some money, because there are lots of different factors to take into consideration, you know, and the website, it's not just our website, it's for the commercial team, it's for the media partnerships team, it's for the ticket office, it's for the supporters club, it's for everyone, it's not just our website. So, you know, we have to take all those voices into consideration when we think about things like that.
Wow, that's fascinating. So I could spend all day talking about this, having a great conversation with Alex Kunavich, head of content for Liverpool Football Club. I did want to ask about these. It sounds like premium content and the paywalls is one way you guys can really monetize and engage that global audience. So tell me a little about how Liverpool takes into account that it's really talking to fans that are well beyond the ability to attend a game. They're all over the world, maybe in Abu Dhabi, you know, maybe on the other side of the world, down in Australia. How do you guys think about when you're talking to people that may not even speak English as their primary language and may never even have the opportunity to go to a Liverpool game?
Well, that's why we have 49. So we have 49 social channels in 20 languages, and that's one of the reasons why. You know, we, on the last day of last season, more people talked about Liverpool on Thai Facebook than the other 19 clubs put together, you know, because of the kind of work we, you know, and all our different language teams around the world are pretty much all based in those countries. So that gives us a big, big advantage, I would say, than certain clubs who maybe have teams just, you know, centralized, or maybe people that just want to have stuff translated. You know, we actually have people that live in those countries that understand the intricacies, I guess, of the language, of situations, of stuff like that. You know, it's just it really, really, really helps us. I mean, obviously, we have our targets for the next 12 months in terms of certain countries we are, you know, looking at and looking what we're trying to do. And obviously, if we look at, you know, figures in the past year, you know, Vietnam and Thailand are two biggest Facebook pages. You know, March to March, we're up 53%. Twitter, wow, in the past year, you know, USA, up 402%, you know, India up almost 200%, and Poland actually up over 100%. So,
what do you think accounts for that growth? I mean, both in terms of the overall Liverpool growth that we talked about earlier in the podcast, but also that too. And what do you think has been successful to drive such growth?
Success is a big thing. I mean, if you look how close Liverpool came to winning the league last season, mm-hmm, and we signed lots of interesting, exciting players last summer. You know, you could look at our stats, and you wouldn't even have to know the results of the results of the games. And it's the same for most teams. You know, there will be a correlation between how many people visit you, look at your stuff, and how the team are doing. And there's no getting away from that. You know, we had a run January to March where we went 13 games unbeaten. You know, and people couldn't get enough for Liverpool. And then, you know, you lose a couple of games, and you know the appetite for that content kind of wanes a little bit. So that is a big thing. I just think generally, because we've reached out to fans in their native languages, we've done things. We did something in Mumbai last year. And obviously, we got on tour this year to Australia, Kuala Lumpur, and probably maybe one more place. You know, and went to the States last year. You know, if you look at our most popular Twitter growth, you know, Indonesia, the Arabic, Thailand, USA, and India—they're our top five. But it's just the ensuring thing about Liverpool is that, you know, they haven't won the league since 1990, and they've won, apart from the League Cup, they haven't won a major trophy since 2006. But because they won so much in the 70s and 80s, you know, so many European Cups, so many leagues, that, and because of a lot of, you know, a lot, some countries we mentioned there still former British colonies or countries that have ties to Britain, you know, where a lot of British people may be moved, or there's an expat community, or, you know, BBC World Service is a brilliant driver for all British sport, you know, all over the world. You know, Liverpool are one of the main teams. So I find it incredible, you know, Manchester United and Liverpool. Manchester United obviously have had amazing success over 20 years, and they were a big club anyway, so that doesn't surprise me how popular they are. But, you know, the enduring love that fans all over the world have for Liverpool is incredible. I think we battle every day. It's a challenge. How do you appeal to fans abroad without affecting how your local fans feel about you? But ultimately, what people love is the match day experience at Anfield. You know, singing "You'll Never Walk Alone," looking at how, you know, fantastic stadium. You know, one of the, so many stadiums have been rebuilt or redone, and Liverpool's getting a bigger stand, but it's still going to retain, you know, that intimacy of, you know, like a lot of stadiums built in very working class areas, surrounded by small tight houses, you know, very close to the pitch. The atmosphere that resonates through the TV, you know, they want a piece of that. They want to feel some of that, and that's what we have to give them. You know, we have a great web team. They will, you know, we'll get some great pictures every game. You know, there'll be exclusive access to the dressing room to take pictures of, you know, mm-hmm. the kit or that sort of thing. You know, you must understand, we don't get the access. No team does. The access is so different to the States. You know, we don't get players on a daily basis. We're not allowed in the dressing room. It just doesn't work like that. It's totally, totally different. You know, so, you know, in terms of what we do out of the people we get, you know, we do a great job. And I think we'll be much more visual. You know, our Instagram is very strong. And that's what the fans want. They want to feel part of it. They want to know behind the scenes stuff, and they want to get to know the players as people. I mean, we do a show called 60 Minutes, which is speaks for itself. It's an hour long interview with players, and it had been quite a while since some first team players had been to our studio. You know, our studio was in the centre of town, and the players were on the outskirts of the training ground. And we got in Jordan Henderson, who's the vice captain. He did a great interview. We've just had a Kolo Touré, in fascinating guy, Ivory Coast international, amazing, incredible career, an amazing talker. You know, and getting these guys in, and when you get that long with them, you can talk about different stuff. It's not just about the last game or the next game. You can get to know them as people, and that's what the fans want to do. They want to be able to relate to these guys, especially the guys that have had fascinating stories. You know, Grant, you grew up in the Ivory Coast and you end up playing in the Premier League, you know, and how do the people get there? So that's, you know, I think that those to me are the key elements of what the fans want to feel. And I think, you know, human interest stories will drive you and drive your traffic, whether you live in Liverpool or LA or Thailand or Australia.
So is it really, when you guys do get that access, is it making sure that you guys are maximizing it and stretching it as much as you can, and making sure that the best stories are coming out when you have that little bit of access?
Yeah, I mean, we've made a big push for news. I mean, we were never based at the training ground, and we pushed and pushed. And we from the start of this season, we've had our own room at the training ground, which was a big, big thing for us, you know, to kind of get in there, get in with the team, get in with the players, you know, get to know our faces and stuff. That was a big, that's been a big, big thing, you know, that we want to show that we're part of the team, you know, and that has helped us in some ways, you know, develop those relationships, because the news and getting those top lines and getting those stories that no one else can get is, you know, that will help drive traffic more than anything else as well. You know, to become that place where people can get the Liverpool news from. You know, we don't deal in speculation, we don't deal in gossip. You know, we only deal in facts and, you know, official club lines, and that's what we are. You know, we would never speculate on anything like that. You know, we will always get our whatever we want to say or do. Maybe we might have to run it past the press officer or someone in the medical department. And it's getting, you know, and our guys have been pushing that more and more, and we've been getting more and more out of there. You know, the press office guys and everything have been really, really good and really accommodating in that, because they understand our point of view. You know, we have now a subscription service. We have to offer something. You know, we have to offer something. That's why I'm slightly different to, I guess, most people you get on this show, that TV is still a big part of what I do. You know, it's probably going to become less of a part, and the digital and social will become more, but it's still a major part. But it's still, you know, we would still position the LFC TV Go definitely as an international tool for, you know, a way of people learning about Liverpool. The other thing we've got, which we launched towards the end of last year, was LFC Extra, which is extra without the E, which is a totally different kind of website. I guess you'd call it a gateway to LFC. So you might not know about LFC, you might have just heard something about them, you want to know more, and that is where you will get your five things you didn't know about such and such, ten players that played for Liverpool and Chelsea, where you'll get your social media, more of your social media stuff and all that. So that, as a gateway, has been fantastic for foreign fans. You know, you're not here, you're not going to change a Manchester United fan into a Liverpool fan or vice versa. It doesn't happen. But what we can do, you know, and what obviously other clubs are trying to do, attracting those fans overseas. And, you know, no other club is doing what we're doing with LFC Extra. You know, it's a completely different proposition. You know, honestly, people listening, please go and look at it, because it's still a work in progress. But what it does, it just offers small, bite-sized stuff, very pictorial, very snappy. You know, it's we did something, the guys on there did something the day just about the How Old Am I website that was up there. Yeah. You know, we just did the entire first team. You know, we had like Coutinho, who's like one of the best players this season, said he looks 16. You know, so, you know, we had some fun with that. But it's, you have to do that on that day. You know, you can't do it a day or two after. But when there was the whole thing with the dress, what colour is it? You know, Manchester United did something on that very well, because they had a kit that was blue and black. So it works for them. It doesn't work for Liverpool, because they wear red, or they wear yellow, or they wear black. So there's certain things where we spoke about in the office, but the worst thing you can do there is do something that's really lame, and you will probably get more criticism for than anything, or it doesn't work, or it feels forced. It's got to be right. That's the thing. I would rather do fewer stuff and do it right, and, you know, get it extremely popular than trying stuff that's too hard. I mean, it's very hard lines to follow, isn't it? If you look at how the lad from Houston Rockets, mm-hmm. and what happened to him with that tweet, or you look at what the Cleveland Cavaliers have just done with the advert. You know, people are trying to push the envelope and do different stuff, and sometimes people will, you know, cross the line and it backfires. But it's a very, you know, where do you draw that line? But certainly Liverpool fans, you know, they will hold us to account. We spelt a player's name wrong in an Instagram post last week. You know, one letter wrong, and you hear about it. They're passionate, they're dedicated. You know, they know their club, and they expect us to, and they've got every right to expect that. So, you know, we are held to account by our fans in a good way on a daily basis. You know, and that is something that, you know, we really thrive on.
Wow, just a couple more minutes left before we get to the episode's charitable stat. I want to ask you two quick questions. One is, you talked about really growing that global fan base and getting supporters from all around the world. Is there an end game to that? Is there a way to monetize those fans? Is trying to then get them to pay for premium content, to buy kits abroad? What's the monetization play there?
I think, to be honest, it's the first thing is to get as many people to know about Liverpool Football Club. That is the starting point. You know, most people will have access to the Premier League in their country. Obviously, yeah, to get people to sign up to LFC TV Go, it's fantastic. You know, we're looking at, you know, our pricing structures there, and how do we want to take it forward. We did something different with the charity game. We offered that for £1 for one day, and that all went to the charity rather than, you know, you have to sign up for a month or 3 months. And we're doing something similar around the close to the end of May, around the 10th anniversary of Liverpool winning the Champions League, and also, obviously, Steven Gerrard, maybe the club's greatest player ever, certainly one of the club's greatest players ever, is leaving at the end of the season. So we're going to have loads of content around the end of May. So again, we will probably offer some little you know, a sign-up package there that's a short-term one to get people in to look at our content. Okay. I think this is now a permanent battle, if you will, for fans abroad. It's not going to end. It's like the roadworks you see on the motorway. It doesn't mean that they'll disappear one day. They'll just move somewhere else. And it's the same for fans, you know. And we want those fans. Chelsea want those fans. Manchester United want those fans. And obviously, some countries, some teams do better in some countries and vice versa. You know, if you look at our top 10 Facebooks, you know, Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, Egypt, India, you know, Brazil is now number 7. Brazil is a massive growing market, and they've got a lot of good players in the Premier League. You know, India, I think, is a huge market. We've set up an academy there, and obviously, as I said, we did something in Mumbai. So, you know, we're looking to put roots down in as many places as possible. Obviously, when we go to Kuala Lumpur, it's a place we've been to before, but, you know, that's the sort of thing where you will engage with fans, people will be allowed to meet players, that sort of thing. Same on tour last year, you know, we did Boston, we did New York, we did Chicago, we did Miami, and we did North Carolina as well. And everywhere there, you know, there was people getting a chance to meet the players relaxed, it's pre-season, so it's a great opportunity, you know, for the players to meet their fans as well, certainly pre-season in a more relaxed environment. But I also know, going to a place like Kuala Lumpur, how passionate the fans are, certainly Australia as well. The fans are incredibly passionate and dedicated Liverpool fans. You know, we played in Adelaide and Brisbane, and those games sold out really, really quickly. And the difference for this year is, last year we played those games in International Champions Cup as part of a bigger tournament, whereas these are games that we as a club, we are organising them. We are, with the help of others, promoting them, you know. So we are taking ownership of these games as a club, everything around them. We have a separate tour website, lfctour.com. You know, we take real ownership. We help people that help in sponsor these games with competitions to win tickets and all that sort of stuff. You know, when we go over there, we will do plenty of stuff around there. Like, for example, when we were in Boston last year, we got some players to do a bus tour. You know, wherever we go, we like to bring a bit of where we've been back to our fans, you know, to bring them that experience of what it's like to be in the city if they can't be there. In exactly the same way that to our foreign fans, we like to try and give them, you know, a piece of Anfield, a piece of Liverpool. And that's what we do when we say Ian Rush and Robbie Fowler, two of our ambassadors. So we signed a TV deal recently with PPTV in China. So Robbie Fowler goes over there to meet people. Ian Rush was in Vietnam recently, I think. We signed signing an energy drink. So, you know, we do have, the club takes this stuff seriously now. It will go and send its legends to meet people, to shake hands, to sign autographs. You know, the maxim of this club is football's biggest family, you know, and that is the basis of everything we do, you know, to make people feel included, you know, as much as possible, as, you know, Liverpool being one big family. And that obviously extends to the stuff we're trying to do around our social stuff to make as many people feel included as possible. And by doing as much stuff as possible in local languages, that really, really helps us.
Definitely. Well, we have so much more we could talk about, Alex. I could talk to you for hours about this stuff and pick your brain. But we'll have a little more fun with you coming right up with our All About Alex segment. But first, let's get this episode's shareable stat. We'll be right back with that.
Well, I tell you, I had a long list of questions to ask Alex, and we did not even barely scratch the surface of all the great knowledge and expertise that he has to offer. Really enjoyed learning from him, the head of content for Liverpool FC, Alex Kunovic. And we're going to get to know him a little bit more in our All About Alex segment coming right up. But first, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat is a collection of stats. Looking at Liverpool FC's social media following on a handful of foreign media social media sites. Including, while these numbers are a little bit higher now by the time you're listening to it, going into this taping, the number of Sina Weibo followers for Liverpool FC was over 2.3 million, while they had nearly 500,000 on Youku and 61,000 on VK, which is the sort of Russian social media network, which is a lot of content on there. So think about that. They have almost 2.5 million almost on Sina Weibo, and as you heard Alex talk about them really focusing on growing in China with media rights out there now, looking at other countries in India, and really finding good ways to connect to Liverpool fans all around the world, and that includes social media. And the most important thing that Alex pointed out, and this is really something to take into account if you're looking to expand into international markets, and that is really respecting the culture and the language. So that means not just taking your tweets and your content, your Facebook posts and everything under the sun and using, you know, Google or Bing Translator and then calling it a day, but it really is understanding how do other people speak about your sport. You know, it's not a verbatim translation oftentimes, nor is the way that social media networks are used the same way. You know, Facebook and Sina Weibo are very different, and Twitter is very different from those. So making sure that you're respecting the culture, the language, the words they use for certain things, the way they talk about things, as well as the individual platform that they like to use, and making sure that you are using it in a native way. You should look like any other team or brand that they love and enjoy, and not some foreigner trying to invade their space and get their content in front of someone. So that's this episode's shareable stat. Again, 2.3 million followers on Sina Weibo, almost 500,000 on Youku, and nearly 61,000 on VK. Definitely some social networks to keep an eye on as social media and sports gets really increasingly global by the day, and in no time we'll have a ton of clubs probably on Sina Weibo and Line and who knows what else. So keep an eye on it for sure. All right, that's this episode's shareable stat. Definitely spend some time thinking about it. Maybe research some of those social networks out there and see how they work, and see what you can learn. All right, we'll be right back to have a little fun with Alex Kunovic, head of content for Liverpool FC, as we grill him in our All About Alex segment.
All right, that was this episode's shareable stat, and it really just a collection of stats that speaks to the incredible global reach of Liverpool Football Club, which is a testament to our guest today, Alex Kunovic, head of content for Liverpool Football Club. Alex, you guys have followers on Sina Weibo in China, on Youku, all over the world. You have followers on VK in the thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. What's been the key to really growing those places? It sounds like it's really just speaking their language and understanding their culture.
Yeah, so Sina Weibo, we've basically gone up 51% in a year. And I think it's if you show commitment to a place. You know, we sent Robbie Fowler, who's a legend, when we signed our deal with PPTV, and getting the PPTV guys to come over to England. You know, we did some filming with them. Their presenter who came over has got 8-10 million followers on Weibo himself. So, you know, it's by engaging with people like that, you know, helps you gain credibility with the fans in those countries to show that you've got a genuine interest in those people and what they want to do. So that's been a huge driver for us.
Excellent. Well, Alex, you survived your interview. Are you now ready for our All About Alex segment?
I hope so, mate. Let's go for it.
Let's do it. All right, number one, the most important development in sports content since you began your career. Tough question, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, well, for me, probably the internet. But social media has to be. And, you know, it's given everyone a voice. It's gone from the voice of you must own a newspaper or a radio station or a TV channel to have a voice. And that's flipped it 180, you know, social media without a doubt.
Excellent. All right, number two for you. So the Liverpool has a lot of great content on its website, as well as a ton of great content all over the place on social networks. So I guess what is one big reason for and against driving traffic and engagement to your website versus driving it more on the social networks?
Four is obviously you have 100% control of it. Four is obviously the more content we get on our website, the more it helps. You know, bigger hits mean, you know, more sponsors and that sort of stuff. Obviously, if you're putting stuff, say, on a place like Facebook, you for some things you might get higher numbers, or if you put it on social to get where stuff is easily shareable, you know, you can maybe reach people that you wouldn't necessarily be going to our website. And that's why LFC Extra has been a great thing for us, because it's not like a formal club website. It kind of straddles between the two and does a really nice job.
Excellent point. Number three for you, Alex. This is one we kind of talked about a little bit in the interview, but how does the club's performance on the pitch affect the way that you really plan, produce, and promote content? And do you have sort of one plan that if they win this week versus one plan if they lose, one plan if it's close and it's a draw?
To some degree, yeah. I mean, it's something we certainly take into account. If you want to do something fun and wacky, you're not going to release that 5 minutes after a heavy defeat. You know, you will look to reschedule that. You know, so the tone and the voice of our social media and how it is will change A little bit, depending on yeah, exactly how we've done. You know, we can be a bit more relaxed and informal if we've done well. Than if not, you know, we are very passionate fans, and you know, ultimately the focus on the club is about winning games, and that's, you know, the more the club does that, the more it helps us, the more popular our content becomes.
Oh, definitely a good point. You don't want to be joking around after a bad loss, for example. All right, number four for you, Alex. What would you say makes Liverpool in particular and its fans unique among all the other clubs in the world?
I think the song, you know, You'll Never Walk Alone. You know, it's from the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical Carousel back in 1945, and it was covered by a band called Jerry and the Pacemakers, and that's when the fans started singing it on the Kop at Liverpool, and it's just stuck, and it's sung by lots of other fans around the world, you know. Fans that English isn't even their first language, it's a footballing anthem, but its heart is in Liverpool, and I think it's that specialness of that song, and it's the specialness of the fans, and going back to, you know, football's biggest family, that's what it's like, that's the feeling of what it's like to be at Anfield, and you know, it's that feeling that we try and transmit around the world, and it's the feeling that makes Liverpool such an attractive club for people to follow, because, you know, I don't think you get that same feeling at the Emirates or the Etihad or Old Trafford or Stamford Bridge. I honestly don't think you do. I think every club has its own unique elements and certain idiosyncrasies or whatever, but I think that's something that's uniquely special to Liverpool.
Oh, I love it. I can't imagine the goosebumps you probably feel when you're standing in Anfield and that song's being sung, and you think about all the people around the world that are joining you in that song. That's incredible. Number five for you, Alex. So you've been there over a year now. Your most memorable day so far as head of content for Liverpool FC?
You know what? Since I started, it's been an incredible news year. You know, obviously we had Luis Suarez leaving was a big thing for the club, and then Steven Gerrard announcing he was going to leave was absolutely huge. You know, I mean, a few of us knew about that story a couple of days before it came out, so it gave us time to plan that, you know, and the way we did that, the way we covered it, the way we executed the plan, the way Claire Rourke, who's our lead presenter, the way she did the interview, tone perfect, the way we edited the show, the way we got it out there, you know, we put up some clips and around, I thought we just absolutely nailed that as a team. You know, we're planning some very special content around Stephen leaving for the end of this month, so, you know, please do watch this space. But, you know, we absolutely, as a team, we nailed that, and that was obviously a huge, huge thing. A guy that's played all his career at the club, he's, you know, maybe the most popular player ever, maybe the best player ever at the club. So, you know, we couldn't afford to get that wrong. Everyone got it right. So, yeah, that was really special to me. The other day was the charity game, just because we had a massive game on our channel that was ours alone. You know, we drove subscriptions online, we drove subscriptions on TV, we made loads of money for the charity. You know, we got access to all the big names, and again, the TV coverage, the web coverage, the social coverage. We were able to do vines and stuff inside the stadium and not worry about infringing on Premier League rules and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, again, a real coming together of the team. So those two were real standout days for me.
Very cool, and it sounds like just having the press office for the club, letting you guys know a couple days in advance, being able to plan really helps there, and it helps that they get it, that it helps, because when you guys know, you guys can maximize the ROI, I guess, to some degree.
Yeah, 100%.
Right. Number six for you, Alex, coming toward the end of our All About Alex segment. Which Liverpool player consistently gets the most fan engagement through the content, and why do you think that is? I have a feeling what the answer is going to be, but I want to hear what you have to say.
See, Mario Balotelli is huge. You know, he's by far the biggest, but obviously he hasn't played a lot this season. Obviously, he hasn't scored maybe as many goals as he'd like. I mean, Steven Gerrard is on Instagram. He's not on Twitter, but his pictures are incredibly popular. And Felipe Coutinho, he's on Twitter and Instagram. He doesn't do a lot on Twitter, but he does loads on Instagram. And again, he's been one of Liverpool's best players this season, if not the best. And, you know, he's been... He was a good player last season, but he's really, really developed into one of the stars of the team. So I think people have enjoyed finding out a lot about him. Obviously, big lifestyle change for a guy. He played in Milan before he came to Liverpool, so that would have been a good grounding for him, because Milan weather-wise is very similar to Liverpool. But, you know, still a guy that's come over from Brazil and really adapted and really enjoys his life in the northwest of England. So, you know, I think he's really good and really positive on Twitter and on Instagram. And certainly when we did some filming with him, he was really positive about promoting, you know, the stuff we were doing with him on Instagram as well. You know, we had real buy-in from him, so I think he's been fantastic for us.
That's great. It always helps when the players get it, when they understand that it's more than just a burden, that's a chance to connect with fans. All right, number seven for you, Alex. We talk about videos doing really well, photos, throwback stuff from the old days, audio. What type of content is most popular consistently with Liverpool fans? And has it changed in your year there?
Anything we do on Cop Kids, which I said we'll put on free for YouTube, you know, we have stuff there that's in the millions, you know, whether it's Finn, who's the little lad interviewing Steven Gerrard, or Luis Suarez when he was here, or the stuff we've just done with Sturridge or Balotelli. You know, people love that. The players relax a bit. It's just fun. It's informal. Something that does really well every week is just photos of training. You know, it's incredible. Our galleries are the training pictures, and, you know, again, players normally smiling, having fun, joking around. That they do consistently well. If there's something that you see in training that, you know, maybe someone scores a great free kick, or we had Moreno, who's a Spanish defender, he was practicing doing the dance that Daniel Sturridge does when he scores. So we clipped that up and we stuck that for free. We showed it. And then that weekend, Sturridge did score and they did the dance together. So it was absolutely perfect.
Oh, perfect. Wow.
You know, I mean, there are big restrictions on Premier League footage. So, for example, we can't show stuff for 14 days until after the game on Facebook. I think that was a cup game, but again, there's big restrictions on that. But we could show the dance because we had that. So things like that, you know, we basically got a second bite of the cherry with that. So, you know, you see it now, you know, people's doing great skills in training. People will consume that and watch that. So that's a big thing for us. As I say, pictures of the players, all their kits nicely laid out, I think always looks really cool, really nice.
Okay.
We're doing some changes to the look and feel of some of our Instagram stuff and stuff like that. So watch this space, hopefully, for the better. That's something we're working on as well. But certainly that sort of stuff. And as I said to you before, it's the stuff that makes the behind-the-scenes stuff that will make people feel, you know, that they get to know the players a bit more, do something different. James Carroll, who's the editor of our website, interviewed Emre Can, who's a German player of Turkish extraction, a couple of weeks ago, and he took along an iPad and just showed him a chant of the fans chanting his name. And just by doing that, you get a different reaction out of a player and a different answer than if you just asked him that question. You know, it's far more visual. And again, you can just clip it up, nice little thing to put on social. So yeah, we're trying to put more and more on social, but obviously we have to balance that with, obviously, we do subscription channels, but you know, it's definitely a great way to promote stuff out there and show people the different kind of programming that we're doing.
Oh, a lot of great nuggets in that answer. I love it. All right, it's a fun one for you. Tell me the best food to get at Anfield, and how about the best food at an EPL stadium besides Anfield?
You know what? I don't think I've ever eaten at Anfield. I'm told the pies are fantastic. I asked around the office. I'm told the pies are really good, but the food, I went to I went to a game at Burnley earlier this season. Burnley, the food is absolutely amazing. If you look at the smaller Premier League teams like Burnley and clubs like that, one thing they have to really sell is, you know, hospitality, catering, food like that is such a big deal. So for those more expensive tickets for maybe people that are going to go and have a meal and do other stuff like that and not just watch the game, the food there has to be absolutely spot on. And I was invited by someone just to go for a proper meal there, you know, before the game, and it was absolutely fantastic and the service was really great. But yeah, going back to Anfield, I've never had any of the posh stuff there, but I'm just told, you know, that the pies that you can buy there are among the best, so that's good enough for me.
Okay, that's excellent. That's a really good point about Burnley really having to focus more on the hospitality than a bigger club. All right, number 9 for you, Alex. What social media network or trend do you expect to take off among football clubs in the next year?
You know what, I was going to say Snapchat for this, because we did a story of the day with Snapchat around the Liverpool game, sorry, the Manchester United game, and the numbers we got were unbelievable. I can't tell you what they are, but the numbers we got were absolutely incredible. So we'll probably do something with those guys going forward again and just see what happens. But it's got to be Periscope. It has to be Periscope for the way things are developing. You know, at the minute, we show all our press conferences live on our channel, and that's a big USP for us. So what happens if journalists want to start periscoping stuff on their phones? You know, it's a big, big conundrum for a lot of people, you know. And as I said before, goes right down to that core of, you know, we have press conferences, certain stuff's embargoed, whether it's, you know, people going to sporting events and videoing it, or are they videoing at home? Periscope, I think, could potentially change the whole sporting landscape in the next year or two. Certainly how clubs and how people like us will use it. We can use it for great stuff, really, about getting atmosphere from stadiums. We don't have to worry about you'd have to worry about proper cameras and uplinks and all that sort of stuff. You can get that sort of stuff really, really easily. And I think for our point of view, it's a great way to bring colour and atmosphere very easily to fans all around the world. This is what's going on at Anfield now ahead of the game and stuff like that, but I can see why rights holders will also have major concerns about it.
It's going to be a fascinating thing to watch over the next several months and year. All right, last one for you, Alex. You got a little bit of a head start because the first legs have already been played, but tell me your prediction for who's going to win this year's Champions League.
I did get a head start, but I decided before these games that I was going to say Barcelona, and last night has done nothing to disprove that. The front three are just absolutely unplayable. So what I guess we don't want is if we get a Barca and Real final in Berlin, is those games tend to be very tetchy, very tempestuous, very niggly, lots of fouls and diving. And I hope we don't see that for final if it's those two clubs that go through, which I think it will. I think Real will overturn the deficit, and I think that front three of Barcelona at the minute are just absolutely unplayable. It doesn't matter that maybe their midfield isn't as strong as it used to be, or the defence isn't, because you've got three guys that are really at the top of their game. They've all bought into it. They're all playing together. And if you're thinking about marketing a football team, you've got three guys from the three best football teams in South America, three star players, mm-hmm. all playing together, quite incredible. And they've all bought into it. So, I love watching those guys play. Some games, you just watch and it's a real pleasure to play. And, anytime you can watch Messi, it's always a pleasure.
Oh, definitely. I think Jerome Boateng is never going to want to see a clip of that play ever again.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, Alex, you survived your All About Alex segment. A lot of fun. Now your chance to take over the podcast. Tell us your social media all-star to follow. Someone on Twitter, a blog, a website, whoever they are, and why they're worth following.
I'm going to take two, if that's all right. One is Hayley McCool, HayleyMcCool. She's our social media editor and development editor at Liverpool. And, she's really driven things since she came in January. The other one's Samantha Barry, and her Twitter's at Samantha Barry. She's a former colleague of mine at the BBC, girl from Ireland, who's now in charge of social media for CNN. She's done amazingly well. She's only in her early 30s, probably. She's done absolutely fantastic. So those two, and the reason I picked those two as well, not just because they're both fantastic at their jobs, is that I'm a big advocate, and I'd love to see more women involved in this side of the business. I guess if you just look at the guests who've been in your podcast, in the first 40 episodes, it's not through choice, is it? It's about the people that are working in the industry and that sort of thing. So, I'm a big advocate of getting more women involved in this side of the business. So, those two ladies are right up there with the very best. So they're both definitely worth a follow.
Oh, very well put, and good recommendations. I love that. And how about yourself? Where can we find you and Liverpool? I won't ask you to list all 49 social media presences, but some of the big places to find yourself and the Liverpool FC.
Liverpool first, Twitter at LFC, and our automated one is Liverpool FC, which just every now and then churns out everything we've done. Liverpool FC on Instagram as well. Twitter is also LFC Extra. As well, but we've got that up and running. For myself, it's just my name, Alex Kunawicz, so AlexKunawicz, and that's where you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram, which I'm trying to get a bit more into as well. So there are two places where you can find me, so please, come and say hello.
I love it. Well, hey, Alex, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Really learned a ton about how you command a global audience there with Liverpool, some of the things that you guys are doing to help content reach a global audience and make everyone really feel a part of that Liverpool football family. And it was great learning from you on the podcast, so thanks so much again.
You're very welcome, mate. Anytime.
Really cannot thank Alex enough for joining us on the podcast all the way from North England, and really great learning from him, hearing about his story, his path to where he is now with Liverpool, and the really impressive work that he does leading all that content they produce across, 49 social media networks, as well as tons of apps, and of course a lot of stuff on the web, and various parts of the website, and multiple websites. So a really impressive guy, and really delighted he was able to join us on the podcast, and well, it's going to be hard to root for any EPL club except for Liverpool now.
But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Please join us again next time in a couple weeks. Until then, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Visit the website, dsmsports.net, for more. And, of course, follow me on Twitter to connect at NJH287. Thanks again. Hope your summer seasons are heading toward a good start. And we'll see you next time on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.